You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
And we are rolling along on a Monday. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes behind the glass. As always, hope everybody had a productive weekend, a good weekend, a fun weekend. The Astros had not the most productive weekend. Friday sure as heck was fun. Couple Mancini home runs. The offense was lights out. We saw Justin Verlander do what Justin Verlander does. But on Saturday and Sunday, the bats were stale.
Yeah, one run in two games. That's gross. No other way to look at it. Not a reason to panic, but with what we know right now about Michael Brantley, which is not much outside of be skeptical about a return anytime soon, and with some of the other just question marks that they have in their lineup, specifically in center field just about every single day, because you're seemingly unwilling to put Kyle Tucker or anyone else in that spot, you have to wonder if this is something that could be a prolonged stretch of not scoring, and if this is something that could also rear its ugly head the same way that it did in last year's World Series, where all of a sudden they just offensively were not the team that we're consistently used to over the last half decade.
I thought about the thing that your friend who works in Baltimore had told you about. Mm-hmm. When Mancini's hot, he's really hot, but then he has slumps. All right, well, if Michael Brantley is out, which, by the way, James Click told Robert Ford, quote, "We hope he comes back, but with every passing day, you have to kind of take an honest look at it. There's no update," end quote. Okay, Michael Brantley out. Trey Mancini, you know, up and down with his career. Obviously, we love what we've seen from him so far. But if they have games like this, are you concerned come playoff time, or do you think that they can rally the troops and be more consistent?
That's a good question. I mean, you're always going to have something in the back of your mind, no matter how arrogant you might be as someone who's followed this team over the last 5 years. Generally, assuming that they will figure it out is the correct way to go.
Well, that's my problem, is I always think they're going to figure it out. But I've never lived here when the Astros are bad.
And at the same time, at some point, that's maybe not going to be well-founded. I do think that, you know, just the fact that they've been to five straight ALCS speaks volumes about how good they've been. But at the same time, too, I mean, you have seen stretches in some of the World Series appearances, the last two specifically, where the offense has just been not good enough. And, yeah, look, it's two losses to the Guardians. Who cares in the grand scheme of things?
And the Guardians were bringing their best, because the Guardians are in a very, very tight AL Central.
The Yankees are playing way worse than you now. Like, the Yankees have lost five in a row, and I don't know what's going on there. And also, I wouldn't say they should press the panic button either, but it does feel like all of a sudden the American League's top two teams aren't quite as dominant as they used to be, where the National League, there's a couple of teams right now, the Dodgers, the Mets, the Cardinals, the Phillies, they're all on a roll right now.
Fourth rehab start, third with the Space Cowboys for Lance McCullers Jr. As we turn to pitching. He caught up with none other than, shocker, shocker, Mark Berman about where he's at in his rehab, how he feels, and what he's wanting.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not, I don't want to. I mean, everyone, you know, this has been great to me. I mean, I can't say enough about, you know, the Sugar Land Space Cowboys and the staff that they have here. And we have great guys in our AAA, you know, organization, and the coach staff is amazing. And it just, you know, if I feel like I'm healthy, you know, I want to get back, and I want to pitch with the Astros.
He's honest, right? He doesn't want to do another rehab start. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. We've talked about the Astros have luxury at the pitching position, especially since they brought in Will Smith. I know he's a reliever, but they're adding more weapons to the arsenal. I don't want to say they don't need Lance McCullers Jr. right now, but they're in a really good position with pitching. Why not make sure he's really healthy before he comes back?
Yeah, that's probably what they'll do. I don't know that we can make too many judgments off of what happened in Sugarland, but he did, you know, get touched up. It's always really strange to me determining a pitcher during a rehab stint, whether or not he's on the right track. It's sort of the same thing that you see in spring training too, because they have different goals than getting outs or eliminating the possibility of runs. They're working on specific things. And since it's a game that to them is not important, they can kind of screw around a little bit, if you will. I will say, though, every time I hear Lance McCullers talk about the injury, I just don't want to hear him talk about the injury. because there's always like this like cheeky little twinkle in his eye. And it's nothing against him. Like, it's not his fault. He's being asked the question and he's like, yeah, I don't really know. I mean, it's just been this for almost a year now. And yeah, it's frustrating because it's been this long. And I feel like any time that we get like a bit of information, it just makes me feel more confused.
Did you guys see the video of Diaz coming out for the Mets with the horns in the
background?
Yeah,
that was pretty sick.
Is that not the sickest song that you've, like, I mean, that's awesome.
And the camera angle, too, behind him.
Yeah, I was going to say, the camera angle was like he was Goldberg in, like, 90s WWE. Like, it was, like, crazy.
Or like, the beginning of Goodfellas when they go to the fancy night on the town place, and it's the one track shot of Henry Hill going through this entire club.
Johnny everyone, two times.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Hey, go get the papers. Yeah, yeah. It felt like that a little bit.
Mr. and Mrs. Met, with they had their horns there. I mean, it was cool. And the whole stadium clapping, I liked it. Jacob DeGrom made his comeback, fellas. Here's the final line. He went 5 2/3, allowed one hit, two runs, two earned runs, struck out 12. He was pretty good. He was pretty good. And the Mets obviously are at the top of their division.
He struck out 12 in five innings.
The National League East. They're currently 70-39. The Braves are right below them at 64-46. Could the Mets be a threat, especially with Jacob DeGrom back?
Definitely. Yeah, if they got him back. It's weird, though. I mean, like, everyone's playing well in the National League right now, you know, outside of maybe Milwaukee, as far as the actual contenders. I guess if we had to pick right now, how about let's all go around the room. Like, who do you think is going to represent the National League?
In the World Series?
Yeah.
You know what? For the whole, how can you not be romantic about baseball? I may go with the Mets just because I think that would be a really great story.
I feel like they have the most horses. I also think that by default, because they're in the same division as the Braves and the Phillies, they're going to be the most battle-tested. Because you look at the National League West, and yeah, San Diego's in it, but LA's always had the upper hand over San Diego to a point where San Diego's cute and obviously they're aggressive, but it's hard to take them seriously as, I guess, a threat to the Dodgers. So I guess if you're picking the Mets, you're saying, yeah, LA's not really getting challenged the same way that the Mets are. And I think I'm leaning towards the Mets being the one that ultimately ends up representing the National League, though I do want it to be the Dodgers, so the Astros get to play them.
What about you, Sean?
Yeah, I think the Dodgers and Mets are, like, clearly the best two teams in the National League, and the Padres getting Soto and Josh Hader, all of this is lining up for it to be the St. Louis Cardinals that win the NL.
Just because that would be annoying.
The Cardinals did sweep the Yankees over the weekend.
Annoying, boring excellence. Or, no, not even excellence. Like, pretty goodness.
Their fans...
insufferable.
Look, Yankee fans, at least, like, they can't help it. They're barbaric people.
Yeah, 27 rings, bro.
Right. They can't read. It's fine. But Cardinals fans carry themselves with this elitist, we're from the Midwest and we're just polite people. And we just do things the Cardinal way. They love to rub people's noses in the fact
which
that,
which is,
like,
not the Midwest way, by the way.
Exactly.
Just FYI.
They're somehow claiming Midwestern humbleness while also being so arrogant.
Which, by the way,
the,
like,
Cardinals.
I grew up a Cubs fan, so I always hated the Cardinals. But what you're talking about is a very astute observation, because that's one of the reasons why I didn't like them. I'm like, they don't even represent the corn-fed deal that we're supposed to have going here.
And people in Houston, of course, hate the Cardinals because of past moments.
National League, yeah.
Right, because that used to be, like, the big brother, the daddy. Who is your daddy and what does he do? I mean, the Cardinals were the Astros' daddy for a while.
Good to know.
Yeah, stop saying daddy, all right?
Why?
Daddy.
I do like when the Astros tweet.
Daddy.
Okay. I like when the Astros tweet your daddy in reference to Yordan.
That's fine. Because it's a play on words.
That's good.
Yeah,
it's a play on words.
Daddy
outright
over.
Daddy.
Who is your daddy and what does he do? What? Yeah. That's from Kindergarten Cop. No.
Oh.
No, it's not. Arnold Schwarzenegger, not in Goodfellas.
Kindergarten
Maybe would have made the movie better.
Or Arnold Schwarzenegger in real life.
I really want to have Arnold Schwarzenegger in one of these mob movies. It's a shame. Like, it'd be really funny if everyone's got, like, Italian accents, and then you have Schwarzenegger in there, and he's, like, just completely, it's not possible for him to do an accent.
I was going to say, is there an Austrian mob somewhere I don't know about?
Ray Liotta.
Oh, I want some gravy.
Turning out to
Give
be
me
Scottish.
Gravy.
proves that you can have a non-Italian in a mob movie.
That's true.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, I'm very excited about the segment. It's our first ever petty segment, and you're going to want to be here for it. But first of all, Paul's going to tell you about PIN.
The Passive Investor Network, a full-service real estate investment firm. They give you a five-year plan when you meet with them. Go to PassiveInvestor.net today and tell them ESPN 97.5 sent you by. You sit down with a portfolio manager. You give them your long-term goals, and they're going to tell you how you can reach them. They do all of the work for you, too. So you invest in real estate. Okay, it's fun, but I mean, think about all the stuff that you might have to do on your own if you don't have the Passive Investor Network in your corner. They do the construction for you. When you buy these places, they will do it with 20-plus years of experience. They find the parts of towns and houses to invest in. And when they're doing the construction of these places, which they fix up quite fancily, you will get daily updates with pictures on the app. Once the construction is done, they then find the tenants for you. They do it all. You own the house. They do the hard work for you and take the headache out of the real estate investment process so that you can make money passively to achieve those long-term goals. PassiveInvestor.net is the website. It's the Passive Investor Network. Once again, schedule a consultation with a portfolio manager at PassiveInvestor.net.
This is Ed Too Tall Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
This is our new segment. It is called our Petty segment, appropriately. This is by coincidence. I'm actually wearing a Tom Petty shirt today, but it is no coincidence that we will come in with a Tom Petty song for our Petty segment. We're going to go around major sports, major league sports, whether it's NFL, NBA, in this case, old white men that can't let things go, and discuss what we think are some of the pettiest moments in sports. We start with one, Steph Curry. Steph was not happy about a comparison that was made and a description of
him. Yeah, some bum basketball player said he's one-dimensional.
One-dimensional.
I've never heard of a guy before. Steph found out about it.
He did. Here's his response.
One-on-one versus you and any of the campers here, what does that look like?
Oh, it's all bad for them. All bad for them. Even as one-dimensional as I am. I'm petty, dog. I'm so petty.
little passive-aggressiveness
there. Was that a fake laugh?
It was a fake laugh. Somebody had called him one-dimensional, so criticized his play as being one-dimensional. Why you would criticize Steph Curry, I'm not 100% sure.
Mike James plays for the Brooklyn Nets, and the quote that James said, I feel like Jokic and Steph are just a little bit below the other top five in the NBA, which was Durant, LeBron James, Joel Embiid, Giannis, and Luka. Steph's, like, how he plays and how he gets stuff off is just kind of one-dimensional at times, if that makes sense. He's not the primary ball handler a lot, and for a point guard, that kind of bothers me. But he does score off the dribbles. He's a superstar. So this is why he didn't have him in his top five. Innocuous at first, right? But if you are one of these guys who's one of the best in the game, you hear that, and you're like, who the hell are you, Mike James? Why are you saying this about me?
Which, like, in response, of course, you could say what a lot of these athletes say. I don't listen to what bums say. I don't listen to... I do actually, in a weird way, respect Steph Curry for admitting that he heard this and that he didn't like it, because what we witness a lot of athletes do in the media is say, I don't care what any of these bumps say. I don't check Twitter. I don't check articles. Bill O'Brien used to do this religiously, by the way. Bill would say that he never read the media, that he didn't care, but then he would bring up something specific that Brian T. Smith or McLean or somebody would write in an article, and it's like, but you so clearly do read what is said about you. O'Brien is bad about that.
I'm glad he didn't get mad about the time that I called a move that he did the Monday after a loss. I said that was a beta bitch move.
Whoa.
punting with 5 minutes left of the game, down two scores.
By the time I got here, I felt like O'Brien was still petty, for sure. Like, O'Brien would have been on our Tom Petty segment, our petty
this
segment
would just be
every
a daily,
week.
Daily thing.
It would. But, like, he was, by the time I got here, I feel like he was just basically worried about three people: McLean, Berman, and Brian T. Smith. Like, I never felt like he really was worried about any of the local news guys, not many of the scribes. But the pettiness was still there.
It's there for a lot of these guys. It's hard to hide from this. I think we all say it's easy to ignore it, but it's really something that you would voluntarily have to do to ignore all the noise is, in 2022, essentially get offline.
We talk about doom scrolling, how we'll say we're going to put our phones down, we're going to blah, blah, blah. And then like 10 minutes later, out of habit,
you're on your phone. You don't even know you're doing
it. And you're just mad about, in my case, I can't get any TikTok views. I thought I'd be good at TikTok. Right. I only did one TikTok.
You have to do trends and dance.
Because I can't do that. I'm not going to be like, oh, is it?
It'll work, though.
Yeah.
And if you do like a report as you do that,
put a sports bra on.
Yeah.
Here's what I found at Texans practice.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, it will work.
That's the sad thing. Like, you hate on it, and yet, like, these little you-know-what who are doing it, they're blowing up. Here I am being petty.
Yeah.
I hate all those stupid kids.
Yeah, whenever a young person comes on ESPN, Paul's like, that person probably just did TikTok.
And they're like, oh, look at this boomer radio host with gray and his eyebrows talking trash about me.
You're not old. Speaking of boomers and speaking of people that are petty, our next petty guest is Pete Rose, who made an appearance on a broadcast this weekend. And oh, the pettiness was there.
Joe said, Tony, congratulations. What did you hit? And Tony says, Joe, I hit a high fastball. And Joe didn't know what to say. Joe said, no.
Here's where the
that's looped
goes
out to right field.
You change the subject real quick on that loop out to right field.
I don't think he was thrilled that the comedy was not appreciated. He thought he was a comedic genius in that moment.
He wanted the sympathy laughters.
I don't know if that was.
Mike Trout get sympathy laughed.
Well, like, that's true.
You know, I think that's what Pete Rose wanted.
Pete Rose is an interesting character. He also this weekend was asked about allegations of having sex with a minor like 55 years ago, and he said like, that was 55 years ago, babe, to whoever asked the question.
No, I'm not here to talk about that. Sorry about that. It was 55 years ago, babe, to Alex Coffey of the Philly Inquirer.
Also said sorry about that, which is probably not the move when you're asked about something that you deny you did. But anyway, that's Pete Rose.
Pete Rose is on Team Petty for this Petty segment. Can we all agree, Steph Petty? Pete Rose Petty. You had one about Russ.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is just me being petty. So I read this. This is from James Palmer, who's at the NFL Network. Was in hot water recently.
Little Brittany.
I was going to say for now.
Did he ever get punished for that?
No, I don't think
he
so.
He probably got called into the
Spoke with him. Yeah. But, you know, they should have spoken with Ian Rappaport about just having an absolutely crazy person take that. A little 5'5" Keebler elf would actually survive in a Russian prison. Okay. James Palmer. The Broncos are going through a mental rep period. Heard this about Wilson. He literally visualizes every aspect like it's an in-game play. Visualizing a pass rusher, moves in the pocket, etc. I was told by a few players, it's like a next level type of mental rep they've never seen.
I cannot deal with the team. The team likes the team.
I responded to this saying, no, I will not ride. Broncos fans, that's bad. Broncos fans, that's bad.
Isn't James Palmer better than this?
What? He's just reporting what the players are telling him. And they all believe this mental BS until they see it in action. It's very, like, look, I get it from Denver's perspective. Mm. Like, Drew Locke was their bleeping quarterback last year. No offense to Drew Locke, but, like, he's not very good. They've had a lot of bad quarterbacks going back to, the last year they won the Super Bowl when Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler were going back and forth. Like, keep in mind, Peyton Manning got benched for Brock Osweiler, and then Brock Osweiler got benched for Peyton Manning. Both were not good, as we obviously saw with Brock Osweiler after he signed with the Texans. And since then, they have just had a bunch of armpit hair at quarterback. Like, it's been gross. Stinky.
The whole team likes the team. And to your point, to be fair, James Palmer is just reporting, and that is
they're all into this.
I love Reggie Wayne.
They're doing
He's
some
the
ayahuasca.
Receivers coach for the Colts now, and he had a quote earlier this year where he said, "It makes me want to throw up how much Matt Ryan reminds me of Peyton Manning." He compared Matt Ryan to Peyton Manning. So these are the things that we hear from camp. We hear Tua is the real deal and Hall of Famer. We hear Devonta Adams saying it's hard to go from one Hall of Famer to one Hall of Famer. We hear James Palmer, quote unquote, reporting not only that Ian Rappaport could survive in a Russian prison, but this as well.
That was the most important report.
Nothing, no statement, no anything.
That was supposed to be off the air.
Is the NFL Network's way that they're going to go about this, their method, just going to be to pretend like it didn't happen?
Yes.
It's not terrible if that's
no,
their
you
method.
Bring attention to it. It's Streisand effect. You're going to, more people are going
to. Or James Palmer gets sent to Jacksonville camp or something.
Right.
Like he gets sent somewhere where it's hot and the team sucks.
Yeah. He's like, listen, you need to understand what it's like to be in a Russian prison. So we're sending you to Jacksonville.
Does Ian Rappaport realize he wouldn't be able to tweet from a Russian prison? I don't know.
He'd probably think, I can make some connections with the guards.
Correct.
Good old Sergey.
Correct.
Sorry, you're not going to jail with a bunch of agents that you can lick the boot of.
What? Mark Bartlestein?
I can have Lee Steinberg and Buddy Baker and David Villegetta. Yeah, I can totally work that room. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, expectations for Paul's former love, the Patriots, plus a legend has her last regular season game in the home venue. That's next.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
So there are questions surrounding the Patriots this year, what their play calling is going to look like, etc., and Mac Jones, what he'll look like in his second year. Mike Giardi, who covers the Patriots unlike anyone else, had a tweet that went viral that caused a lot of conversation about Jones's development. Quote, Mac Jones had some moments of uncertainty a year ago in training camp, but not nearly as many as you would expect for a rookie. This summer, far more. Yes, it's early August. There's time. However, the install started back in the spring, and you'd like more comfort and success. This mirrors a lot of narratives and a lot of storylines we've heard from unbiased reporters. Now, the Patriots team website always says that Mac Jones is doing well, but this is something common that we've heard.
Right. It's fake news. Mac Jones, national champion at Alabama, the best rookie quarterback in the NFL last year. Clearly, this could not be possible. I think that maybe, just maybe, Vanessa, that the reporter has an axe to grind with a certain legendary organization.
Wait, does Giardi have beef with the Patriots?
No, I'm making this up. I'm kidding.
Mike.
Look, I think there are real questions about Mac Jones as a quarterback. How much better can he get? I think we've seen that there are definitely some limitations as far as his athleticism goes. And yeah, okay, he's in better shape this year, supposedly. Everyone's in better shape this time of year. You'll get a report like that every single training camp about one specific player. And with Mac Jones, it's really easy because remember that picture that you have of Mac Jones after winning the national title shirtless. Like, that's just something that's always going to follow him. And unlike with Tom Brady, who also has the shirtless pic of him at the combine, until you win, everyone's going to bring that up and be like, oh, okay. Jones does not have the strongest arm. The Patriots clearly did not feel that comfortable with him throwing the football downfield very often. There's a game against the Bills that they won where they only threw the ball five times over the course of it. Yeah, I think there are real questions about what Mac Jones is going to be able to do this year. And I mean, you take a look at their wide receiver room, Vanessa. It's not a particularly compelling one unless you think that Devontae Parker, who they just got this offseason from Miami, is going to give them what they got in Wes Welker 15 years ago when they got him from Miami. I mean, the Dolphins traded him to New England. That's their best wide receiver. And then it's like Kendrick Bourne and a couple of other guys that they spent way too much money on last offseason. So, I totally understand the idea of Mac Jones potentially struggling this season because there's a ton of pressure on him. And I think that there's a mindset that the other two teams in the AFC, the Jets with what they did in the draft and the Dolphins, they have taken pretty big steps forward. And New England is probably in the same place, at least on paper, going into this year as they were last year.
Matt Patricia, who holds the title of senior football advisor, seems to be the one, according to reporters in training camp, who's calling the plays. He has the walkie-talkie. Mm-hmm. He's making the decisions. We know that there was a competition, quote-unquote, with Joe Judge. Is Bill Belichick going to take the reins? You've covered this team, you followed this team, you love this team. What do you see happening there, and how do you think that's going to impact Mac Jones?
The coaching staff I'm not that concerned about because they've done this before without titles, but it is interesting to note that this isn't the defensive side of things where you trust Bill Belichick to have the final say on everything. This is the offensive side of things, and there have been times in the past where New England's offensive coordinator wasn't particularly good. I would point specifically to the Bill O'Brien era, when he was their offensive coordinator, when it wasn't Josh McDaniels over the past two decades, that's when the offense had some struggles. That was 2009, 2010, 2011, I think.
You're saying in the O'Brien era?
Yeah, that was when he was the offensive coordinator before he went off to Penn State to be their head coach.
That's right.
I never was the biggest Bill O'Brien offensive coordinator fan, but okay, at Penn State, he was able to turn things around, and that's how he gets the job with the Houston Texans ultimately. But it is a situation where I totally understand everyone doubting this team going into the year. They've proven so many people wrong over the course of time, but it helps to have Tom Brady in your corner when you're trying to prove people wrong. And Matt Patricia, Joe Judge, and Mac Jones, that's not exactly the sexiest triumvirate of people that you think are going to make you say eat your words at the end of the day.
I'm glad you said that last part about Tom Brady, because it's like I always say, well, I'm not going to bet against Bill Belichick. But what I've realized throughout the last couple of years is, I'm not saying Bill Belichick didn't have a hand in it. Obviously, he's a genius coach. But I think really all those years when I said I wouldn't bet against Bill Belichick, it really should have been Tom Brady.
Yeah, it should have been, yeah. I'll even admit that. I love Belichick, and I mean, I think Belichick's always going to come up with a couple of surprises over the course of a year, but he's not doing it at the same degree that he did when he had Brady, which, by the way, I mean, that's kind of how it goes for most coaches in NFL history.
Right.
I mean, is there one head coach that you can point to over the course of time and you say, yeah, that guy was good and he never really had that, like an all-time great, but he never really had the help of a great quarterback or something like that?
Baseball comparison, A.J. Hinch. I hate to bring, you know, him into it, but it's like him with Detroit right now.
Yeah,
if he's still with the Astros, people are going to be talking about he's on track for a Hall of Fame managing career.
Baseball managers are weird. Like, I feel like that of all the jobs, like, yeah, you set the lineup and you manage personalities, but it's almost like you're in charge of HR. You know, it doesn't seem like as a baseball
Good
manager
point.
You do a lot. Football is weird. I do think football coaches have the biggest impact on a team, but you still need to have a damn good quarterback to win in this league.
So Josh McDaniels' exit to the Raiders. For Mac Jones, is that a big deal or no big deal?
It is a deal. I think it will be a significant deal. I guess let's define the word big. Yeah, you got a couple of guys who have never been offensive coordinators before that are seemingly now extra involved in that process. And I do think that with Belichick, you can't just assume Belichick only does the defensive things. Like anyone who is a head coach, they have a little bit of background in offense and defense. You might think because of their background that they're specializing in just one, but I think that you should feel pretty damn good about a football mind like Bill Belichick having some thoughts of his own on offense, you know? So I just think it's unfortunate that two head coaches that made headlines in their previous stints for being bozos, Patricia in Detroit, Joe Judge in New York, and specifically with the way that they spoke, I think that that is a totally fair reason to question what the hell's going on in that coaching staff.
Sean, you also pay attention to the rookie quarterbacks last year, Mac Jones going into his second year. Big deal or no big deal that Josh McDaniels is out and that there's a new, quote-unquote, interesting system for calling plays?
I mean, I think it's a pretty big deal for Mac Jones' development, because you always talk about, like, you want a coach or an offensive coordinator who works well with quarterbacks. And at the very least, you can say that the Patriots do not have anyone with a track record of working well with quarterbacks. They basically don't have a track record of working with quarterbacks, if it's really Joe Judge and Matt Patricia as the brain trust here on the offense. So I think Mac Jones can still be the kind of steady Eddie quarterback that he was last year. But as far as him like progressing or getting better in any way, I can't see how he does that other than he apparently is in better shape now.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. Like, I don't think knowledge was an issue for him last year. I think he picked up the system pretty quickly, which is really good. But how much better can you really be from year one to year two when you just aren't that physically gifted?
And let's just call a spade, he's in the AFC, right?
Like, yeah,
so
that too.
The AFC, you're going to have to be so good to stand out in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, you got to win. You got to win shootouts.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be Mac Jones and Kendrick Bourne and Devontae Parker going up against like Pat Mahomes.
Right.
And look, they have a great running game. Like, I think that in Damian Harris and Demondre Stevenson, like that's a top five 1-2 running back combination in the league. But how many games can you win just by running the football? I don't think you can really do that anymore. Like, a playoff game has to go almost perfectly according to script for you to be able to win and run the football the whole game.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Titans. Where yeah. They have pretty good regular seasons as long as Derrick Henry's healthy, and then they lose in the first round. Mm.
Legend Sue Bird played her final regular season home game in Seattle. She has 215 wins there, which is the most of any player at any venue in the WNBA. She's hanging it up, guys, after 21 years. I know we don't follow the WNBA very closely, but pour one out for an absolute legend. And I wonder who's going to get all the endorsement deals she gets. She's a great ambassador for the game. Last regular season game for Sue Bird.
So when I was up in Seattle, everyone was like, you got to watch the Storm. You got to watch the Storm. And I was always like, do I have to watch the Storm? But they are in basketball. Like, they were the best team, and she was one of the main reasons for it. Fun Sue Bird story, because we both are Larry Bird fans, and I remember once thinking, oh, maybe Larry Bird and Sue Bird are related. That would be a cool story.
It would be.
So she said that she used to lie and tell everybody that Larry Bird was her uncle. Like, she admitted
incredible.
To this. Incredible. Yeah, like when she was growing up, she's like, yeah, Larry Bird is my uncle. No big deal.
If your last name is Bird and you're involved in basketball, especially since Larry Bird's children, he has three, and none of them went on to play professional sports, so wouldn't you like just use that as much as you can? And before the internet?
Oh, yeah. You would probably be able to get away with it. And she actually told Larry Bird. She's like, yeah, I used to lie that you were my uncle. He was like, I'm honored.
There was a kid that gave her a little rose before the game, a little girl that gave her flowers. It's a very touching video if you haven't seen it.
If anyone ever had the last name, if anyone in sports ever had the last name Mapes, I would definitely like draft off that as much as possible.
When the Colts brought in Trent Richardson, I said I was related to him, but I didn't think that one through.
A lot of semblance. You know, you guys do look very similar.
It was just an initial joke that I didn't think through.
I thought you were going to say that you like bought a jersey or something, because it's like a way
too.
To get a personalized jersey.
No, I did that too, and then I didn't end up wearing it a lot.
Well, yeah, because he sucked.
Because it didn't work out.
He was
out.
So bad.
Didn't work out.
Maybe the worst pick of the Ryan Grigson era. My big problem is that the only guys that have my last name are like Canadian hockey coaches.
Yeah, who has the last name Gallant?
There's a guy named Gerard Gallant who has been a coach on a couple of different teams. And there's another hockey coach. My first name is Paul. My middle name is Maurice. There's another hockey coach somewhere that is named Paul Maurice. So there's like two NHL coaches that kind of have my name. But yeah, I don't think there's one player that has my
name.
Who
is the last name Mapes?
Nobody.
Any athletes?
No.
We all have last names that aren't super, super common.
Like, I don't know. Yours is pretty common comparatively, I think.
Yeah.
You're the most common out of the show, but it still isn't like...
But it's still not like Smith or Watson or Williams where you can easily find one. Interesting. Yeah.
There's a pitcher. He used to pitch for the Cubs. I don't know where he is now. His name was Dylan Maples. And so if you read it really fast, you're like,
There you go.
Like,
that's the only hope you've had.
Oh, wow. Hey, this is actually pretty interesting. I just looked up Gallant on Wikipedia.
There you go.
Someone in my family actually popped up on including these names from Gallant. Like, my dad's older brother just popped up on this list.
Wait, what does your dad's older brother do?
My dad's older brother was a congressional aide and a lobbyist back in the day.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So that's your uncle?
Yeah, that's my uncle. Lenny Gallant, a Canadian singer-songwriter. Matt Gallant, an American television host. There's a Paul Gallant that invented the 3D miniature puzzle. Not me.
That's what you need to say you did.
I invented the miniature 3D puzzle.
In college, I messed around, invented the 3D miniature puzzle.
You know what? You could use that at bars, though, and you could tell women to Google it.
Yeah,
you can say, no, I'm Paul Gallant. Here's my ID, and I invented the 3D miniature puzzle.
How?
So come back.
How am I not on this
to
list?
To my place.
I feel like I should be on this list.
Oh, help. All right, coming
I knew
up.
Once you read American TV show or whatever
I was like,
TV
what the
host,
hell?
You're going to take it a little
farther. I'm way more famous than him. I got canceled and survived.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, will Paul add his own name to this Wikipedia page? We'll find out. Plus our garbage time segment. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It takes a lot to delete your Twitter out of embarrassment, but that's exactly what happened to Trevon Diggs.
Oh,
he deleted
God.
His Twitter because people, reporters, fans kept posting videos of him getting smoked by practice squad wide receivers.
He also got smoked by CeeDee Lamb, which makes sense. But in one-on-one drills, he wasn't doing so well. And I think there's a lot of questions about Trevon Diggs and just how good he is. Last year, he led the NFL in interceptions. But I think some people are like, is he actually that good? Having 10-plus interceptions in a year, I mean, that's no joke. He had a really good year last season. But I think that when you see the highlights at practice and you factor in where everyone's not like 100% sold on him as the number one corner in the game, you could see why maybe he took it a little bit personally.
I realized he deleted his Twitter because there was a reporter that had added him, mentioned him or whatever.
And it didn't show up.
And then it didn't show up. And the reporter quote tweeted it and was like, okay, well, apparently Trevon Diggs either blocked me or his Twitter is gone. And his Twitter was gone. Yeah, not good. Listen, we've talked about training camp. We just talked about Mac Jones. We talked about what we saw from Derek Stingley Jr. We always play big deal or no big deal with training camp. They were talking about this on Good Morning Football this morning. Every year with the Packers, there's like a wide receiver to watch. And it almost never pans out. So some training camp things don't matter. But like you said, already questions about Trevon Diggs. All right, it's time for our Garbage Time segment.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage Time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
Ah, I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Oh, this is a nice dad joke. Cougar Blaze. Trevon Diggs created a burner account.
Love it. Sean, I can't believe you didn't come up with that. Daddy Sean. That was a really good one.
Nice dad
Speaking
joke.
Of daddy, Pete Davidson, who got his Kim Kardashian's children.
Let's pause for a second.
What? He has BDE. He's the one that they created BDE about. I'm serious.
And he was a stepdaddy until very recently.
That's where I was going with that. I don't think Pete Davidson's hot, by the way.
Do you want to share with the class what BDE is?
Big Dominion Energy.
Sure, that's not the word at all. But
Pete Davidson got Kim Kardashian's children's names, their initials tattooed on him, but yet they have broken up. Yes, love isn't real. Kim Kardashian and Pete Davidson have broken up after 9 months of a very intense relationship.
While we're on real, what about Kim Kardashian do you think is real?
Her eyes.
That's true. You
because
can't
she's
fake your eyes.
A nose job, liposuction, BBL.
Hey.
I think she had something done with her boobs. Her hair's not real. She has her eyebrows microbladed, lash extensions, hair extensions.
Whoever's doing all that
tan.
Work is doing a stupendous job, though.
Oh, wow.
I'm not into Kim Kardashian, but I think that whoever is doing all that work, there's a lot of people that have had a lot of work done, right? And it looks awful.
Right.
Like, I mean, no, I feel bad for Meg Ryan. Like, Meg Ryan.
Yeah, what happened there?
There's some people that, like, go a little bit too far with it. And, I mean, I don't know. People who, sometimes the people who don't do anything, like Julianne Moore, like, still look pretty damn good at their age.
You know that show, How It's Made?
No.
It's a show about, it shows how
made?
Stuff gets made.
Wow.
One of those for the Kardashians.
Love it. Love it.
That's fascinating.
Here's the thing, though. You can't buy everything because Kourtney Kardashian is still the one of the crew who does not look good. I'm sorry. She was born with the roughest physical features.
Well, I thought Khloe was the one that had the roughest features, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, it was, which one? Kourtney. Which one is
Kourtney
Khloe?
Looks good.
No, which one does not? Not
Tristan
the one married
Thompson
to Scott.
One?
Chloe.
The one that's
Tristan
that
Thompson.
Tristan Thompson
what's her name?
Is philandering on.
What's her name?
Chloe.
That's Chloe.
That's Chloe. Chloe still does not look good despite all of the surgeries.
I feel like she has. She looks better than she did
looks
at first.
Better, but she's still the one where you're like, ah, what happened there? Because the two Jenner ones.
Well, there is a famous online theory about.
Yes, maybe she has different genetics.
Oh, O.J. Simpson.
I didn't say it.
Yeah, could be.
The glove doesn't fit. You must have quit.
The glove didn't fit, which is why she's here. The two Jenner girls are cute, kind of naturally, right?
I'm a big fan of Kendall. She's very, because she has tequila. She has a tequila brand.
Kourtney's the one that was married to Scott. Kourtney, I think, is actually really pretty.
Kendall's very talented.
Yeah, very talented. Either way.
I was going to say, also, Pete Davidson getting her kids tattooed.
Weird.
Weird. Also, he has a million tattoos at a certain point. It's weird if, like, Paul and I do that, and it's, like, our first tattoos is the names of the women we're dating.
That'd be a lot of tattoos for Paul.
For wow. Pete Davidson, it means a lot less.
It's not nice.
It might be a lot of, you know, just a lot of names. Pete Davidson and Kim Kardashian, it is over. This might have been her longest relationship in a while. I don't know how long she and Kanye were together. Obviously, it was.
No, it was longer than that.
But then.
It was like 5 years, I think.
She was. Chris Humphries was the really quick one, and then she had a marriage, I believe, before that.
Right. Yeah, look, she's had a lot of public relationships, including with Ray J. The most public. Very public.
Alec Baldwin has been ripped.
Yes.
For asking followers to support Brave and, is this Heshi?
I'm not even 100% sure how to pronounce her last
name. After a fiery house crash.
Sean, you saw this. I saw this morning. Can you, like, try to explain this to us like we're five?
Yeah.
I read the story and I was a little bit confused by it.
I still am.
Because the headline is about how Alec Baldwin's getting crushed for defending her. But the real story is about how Anne Heshi, like...
Yes. The New York Post headline is that Anne Heshi, quote, downed vodka, comma, wine in podcast and posted a podcast hours before a crash. And the pictures of the crash, her car is, like, it looks like it's been bombed. She drove into a house, and her car caught on fire and exploded.
And she, like, got apparently seriously injured in this.
And she had already posted the podcast video.
She got drunk on a podcast, then hopped in her car.
But her rep said that it was a previously recorded podcast, guys. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, that's still not good.
Here's the thing. If you're
that
going
was Thursday, to, not Friday.
If you're going to, first of all, why are you drinking? Why are you getting drunk on a podcast? Unless it's like the drunk history.
It sounds great.
Yeah, I think I imagine Mr. White Linden podcast is pretty laid back.
I bet it's a much more entertaining listen to a drunk Hollywood starlet as opposed to a sober one where they're probably like preaching about how we need to do something about the jet fuel.
What if she got drunk and then sang Imagine to
make I don't like that.
Not walk out during COVID.
I listened to that podcast or like that one girl who said that if I were Vladimir Putin's mother.
Oh, yeah. Who was that?
I don't know.
She goes, I wish I could have just saved you.
Would have just hugged you, little Vladdy.
If I Vladdy Vladimir Daddy. Putin, I want to apologize to you because, it was the, Anna, the girl from one of the reality shows. I don't know. I'm not
Anna
sure the celebrities.
Anna Stubaldies, yeah.
But she apologized.
Old fella McFellapants.
That's like my sister and I were talking over the weekend on the phone about how like some women just are bound and determined to save men. And it's tempting because you want to get out your little toolbox and you want to do a little fixing job. But how messed up in the head do you have to be to want to fix Vladimir Putin? I don't get it.
I don't know. I mean, probably be pretty exhilarating. A rush.
What can't be fixed?
You might end up in jail for 9 years.
Is when you have...
You don't even know.
...poop dumped on people. It is the 18th
Wait, what?
Anniversary of the Dave Matthews Band Chicago River incident. On August 8th, 2004, over the Kinzie Street Bridge in Chicago, a tour bus belonging to the Dave Matthews Band dumped an estimated 800 pounds of human waste from the bus's septic tank onto a passenger sightseeing boat on the Chicago River. I remember when this happened...
Nice.
I'm not going to lie. I forgot that it happened.
I've been on those boats before.
18 years ago. Imagine you're on a sightseeing boat and all of a sudden a massive amount of poop. Now, granted, it may be Dave Matthews
poop.
Or
some pee, too, probably.
But poop, pee.
It's like a pee-poop mix.
All of it just comes
like
on you.
Fermented in the septic system,
disgusting.
Too.
800 pounds is so much for,
a lot.
To be on a tour bus.
Right.
They should probably have emptied it. I don't know.
At like... 300 pounds.
So does this
or
mean that
not
they
on
weren't
a bridge?
That they weren't emptying it
underneath
at all?
The bridge.
Yeah, because imagine how that must be like the end of the tour. Because I don't know how many people are in the Dave Matthews Band, but 800 pounds is a lot to rack.
I mean, if you have, let's say, you have 30 people throughout the day using one tour bus or whatever, that's still 30 a day is like what, maybe 30 pounds of poop a day.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Wow.
A lot of
that
wings.
So much. Human waste.
A lot of corn.
I'm glad you brought this up because I had never thought about the fact that it was 800 pounds.
It's the best time to have this conversation.
I thought they were going to kill someone. I'm surprised no one got killed.
Yeah, 18th birthday. Pour one out for all the people that got pooped on by the Dave Matthews
Band. They didn't get pooped on. They got pooped dumped on them.
Yeah.
Poop
dumped on.
It wasn't
like David Matthews Band like
squatted over a bridge. Yeah.
Right. I mean, like a lot of people would argue that some David Matthews music is kind of like, you know,
you're not a Dave Matthews fan.
Some of the songs are good. I think Crash Into Me is the creepy-ass
you've
song.
You've got your ball, you've got your... That is a...
It's
like,
a very creepy song. He's like, hey, hack up your skirt a little more. Show your world to me. He's like, Jesus, dude.
Yeah, very intense.
I thought I was horny.
That's like the Police, their song, Every Breath You Take.
Him?
It's actually about stalking. So is Crash Into Me. Yeah.
Come crash into me.
So we just got a call. I did not hear any of his bona fides, but he said that water waste, so when you basically like flush a toilet or something, that itself is 10 pounds or 8 pounds.
Each time?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
That's how much. So a lot of that.
So it's watered down.
Yes, it was watered down feces, but still like 100 flushes.
18th anniversary.
Great lunchtime conversation.
What a day in Chicago history. All right, that's been a Monday on Vanessa and Gallant. Coming up next, you'll hear from Joel Blake, Jeremy Branham, the Killer Bees from 12 to 3.
Peace.